All right, hello everybody. I see that the meeting is being recorded, starting now. Thanks to Shoyan for organizing this. If any of you have any issues with this being recorded, please say that now and we will stop. Otherwise, bear in mind that this is going to be public. Somebody in the team asked me to do this so they can listen to this later. I will give you a reminder later anyway, so everybody knows that audio is being recorded. Okay, so while we wait one more minute to start, I will tell you a little bit about the presentation. I hope you could open the slides now. You will see that we have like 26 pages, but most of them are fairly simple, and we will go through them in a short time, so hopefully it will take far less than an hour, so we have some time for questions or comments. And also, if you want to correct something or you want to add something to my comments or to the slides, please feel free to interrupt anytime. I see we have quite a few people on the channel who are actually experienced with Node.js, so I expect people to complement to extend what I say, because we have people in the team who have been using Node for quite some time. So feel free to interrupt at any point. Okay, let's get started. Again, if someone feels like scribing, please do so at your will. Otherwise, we have no scribe. All right, so starting, and also if my audio becomes not very good, please tell me so, because there is a construction site very close to my neighborhood. And if it starts being very noisy, please tell me and I will go somewhere else. All right, so in the page number 2, we have a brief explanation of what Node.js is. I would say Node going forward because it's a very long name, but it's the same thing. First of all, Google a few years ago open sourced a JavaScript engine they call V8. That was around the time that Chrome was launched, if I remember correctly. And that's open source. And it was significantly more efficient than previous JavaScript engines. So it was interesting for many developers for different purposes. On top of that, Node.js was created. Node.js is taking that JavaScript runtime, wrapping it with an API, and giving it access to the operating system features, like access to the file system and things like that. And basically that's it. So it's a JavaScript runtime with a few goodies on top of the JavaScript engine. You have the most important link there, which is Node.js.org, and a few quotes I took from the homepage about Node.js itself. Yeah, we'll go through those in detail in the next slides. So slide 3, I hope you can hear me well. I don't see anybody typing or talking, so hope everything is going well. Yeah, characteristics of Node.js on slide 3, a few of them. It's interpreted. That means that there is no compilation. Everything is interpreted as it was typed, as JavaScript source code. It's dynamically typed. If you've done some work with JavaScript, you know that already. There is no parallelism. So again, if you've worked with JavaScript, you are used to that. So those three, the first three characteristics are actually coming from JavaScript. They have nothing to do with Node. This is not specific to Node. It's things that come from JavaScript. Node is event-driven, pretty much in the same way that user interfaces written in JavaScript on the browser are event-driven, in the sense that in many cases things happen as a reaction to events being triggered by different things, like user interaction, things happening on a socket, events on the network, and with Node, other things like, for example, events related to the file system. In Node, one of the important things to keep in mind is that because it's single-threaded, we should be very, very careful about blocking the only thread we have. So if we are expecting some tasks to take time to be computationally expensive, like reading a very large file or retrieving things from a slow network, things like that, or performing some cryptographic work that is going to take some time, we have to do that in such a way that it doesn't block the main thread. So that's what we call being non-blocking and doing things asynchronously. So the way to do that is, instead of waiting for something to, for some complex task to be completed, we typically use callbacks or promises to keep the main thread running and doing interesting things while the other task is being done in the background. It's not proper parallelism, so that internally, under the hood, the processor will divide the time between those two tasks, but that's not important to us. The important thing is that we should not wait for something to finish and block the main thread. Next slide. So if you don't have it installed already, I think many of you will have it already, and if not, go through those links and you will find the packages and instructions for installing. If you're running Unix, chances are that you have them, the packages, I mean, already available for you on your repositories. So if you're here, for example, I gave the names of the... Yeah, I'll answer that in a second, Ivan. Thank you. We have the packages here on the repositories, and if you are running Ubuntu, for example, as I'm doing, it would be as simple as that, as typing that command, and that will install Node.js. And by typing Node-V, you can see the version you're running. And if you do this today, I think you will get this version, version 6.9.2, which is the latest one, at least in the 6 series. So again, if you don't have it installed, you can try it right now. So we can, further in the presentation, there are a few examples. So if you have it installed, we can try them in real time. You can actually run them like now. And yes, Ivan, about what you said, there is one thread. There are no parallel threads running. So when, yeah, that's the problem. If you block that thread, there is no other thread that can take care of other things. So, yes. I don't know.
Yeah, I understand that. The funny thing is that we still keep to the terminology. That's what you said yourself. Don't block the main thread. Well, there is no thread. The whole system is different.
Yes, you're right. I wasn't very, very...
No, it's just for others to realize that.
Yeah, good point. So, slide 5, there are mainly two ways you can run a JavaScript program in Node, and this is similar to many other environments. The first one is using the interactive console, so to speak. So you have the typical REPL loop. So from your command line, if you just type the name of the environment, Node or Node.js, it's equivalent. You will get access to a JavaScript console. And this is very much similar to what you get in your regular browser when you open the JavaScript console, and you can start typing JavaScript expressions there. So very simple examples here. If you type this expression 1 plus 1, you will get the result. It will be evaluated to an integer. And the other two lines are just for you to see that we have some global objects containing some useful information, and this is specific to Node. So if you type these process versions Node on your browser, of course you will not get an answer. This is just for Node. But apart from that, it works like any other interactive environment, pretty much. And you exit it typing Control D, as in many other cases. The next slide, 6. Yeah, you're right, Chris. It's actually, I said an integer, and I was wrong, because there is no such a thing as integers or floats in JavaScript. Everything is a number. So yeah, it would be a number. That's right. In the next slide, you have the other way to run programs, and that is running from a file. And this is what you will be doing most of the time, actually. So if you create a file called index.js, and in it you put these two lines, 1+1 and console log 2+2, then close the file, go back to your terminal window, and type node index. And that will run the contents of the file, pretty much as if you had entered those lines on the console in the interactive mode. And the result of that program is that you will see 4 being printed on the console, because a single expression like that, like 1+1 that is not assigned to a variable in JavaScript, is not shown anywhere. I mean, we are not saying explicitly that we want that result on the console, so that will be evaluated, but it will not be printed anywhere. So just a funny example a simple example to use. All right. Very, very interesting explanations about the thread thing. Yes, Mike is right about that. All right. The next 4 slides, starting in number 7, are, I thought that when you first encounter Node, you might be a bit confused about the features you can use and where they are coming from, so to speak. So if you see a Node program, if you don't know it very well, you might be confused about whether it's a Node-specific feature or if it's JavaScript or if it's some specific module. So the way I wanted to explain that is thinking of layers and seeing Node as having 4 layers of features, so to speak. So the first one at the core would be JavaScript itself. So everything you can do in JavaScript or ECMAScript, to be strict, you can do in Node. Of course, we have the usual problems with compatibility and adoption of the new standards and so on. But that is not specific to Node, that's common to every other implementation of JavaScript. So you have to be careful about whether you have some features or not, or whether they have been adopted or not, as usual. The third link, this compatibility table, is a resource that I find very useful in general. It's a very, very detailed report about which features of each version of ECMAScript every platform or browser or engine implements. So if you are ever in doubt about whether you can use one feature or not, go to that page, find the feature, and see if the column node is in green or in red. So one simple example would be using template literals, and this is, by the way, something that is new to JavaScript in version 6 in JavaScript 2015. So you could not do this before, but you can now. It's a handy way to interpolate strings with expressions inside in JavaScript. So again, because this is JavaScript, you could do exactly that on a browser, for example. The next slide, number 8, is the next layer on this onion, and this is specific to Node, and this is the API that is around the JavaScript engine. The link there takes you to the documentation of the API, so looks very much like any other API in any other programming platform out there. You have the usual packages to do lots of different things, and everything is explained there. So one in particular using here as an example is this hostname that will give you the hostname of the local machine. Again, this is not something you can do in a browser. You will only be able to do that on Node. Slide number 9. Yet another step in this onion. The third layer would be external packages. So if you just installed Node, you will only have the API, but chances are that for pretty much anything you want to do with Node, you will be using external packages. We saw before a mention to NPM. NPM is the package manager that Node uses. The online version of that is npmjs.com. You have the link there. And you can browse that repository. They have thousands and thousands of packages. As usual, many of them are pretty much useless or abandoned or not worth it. But there are many great packages there to do lots of different things. I'm using one of them called Moment here in my example. You can follow the link and you will see the documentation about the package. The important thing here is, in this example, is looking at the require keyword. This is how you import a package or modules in Node. So you type require and you put the identifier of the package after that. Node by default looks at this repository for packages, so you don't have to give it a URL or anything. It goes always to npmjs.com. And once you have that, the contents of that package assigned to this variable n, we can use it. You will look up the API of this package and see what properties or functions it gives you, and use them as you need. So this is a real example, and this Moment packages does things like, for example, formatting in this nice way. Intervals of time, like this 720 minutes, it will transform it into this nice string. Ivan?
Just this require mechanism of Node these days, is it compatible, the same or different with the modularization that ES6 brought in?
I'm not sure. I haven't used modules in the new native JavaScript way.
Yeah.
So probably someone here has done that and can answer that question.
This is Mike. It's different. It's a separate thing. The require thing is basically just specific to the Node runtime in the same way that you got, you know, well, like other runtimes like that, so it's not implementing the ES6 thing. It precedes the ES6 thing. The ES6 is not based on the Node require mechanism.
But do we know whether they plan to change? I mean, that the new features would also work.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the overlap is, or if they're trying to align, or if there's a possibility for alignment there, or what.
Okay.
Yes, I don't know either. What I know is that as long as they keep implementing standard ECMAScript, that same mechanism will come to Node. So. At some point, if they are not unified, you will be able to decide which one you want to use, of course. Okay, and slide 10 is the last layer. So on top of the packages that are already there for you on this public repository, you are free, of course, to write your own libraries and modules and packages. I'm using modules and packages all the time because I'm not aware of any real differences, at least not in the Node world. So I keep seeing both all the time, so I'm not very concerned about the difference, if there is any. So in this example, you still use require, but when you include a path like the one we have here, this lib stocks, Node knows that it doesn't have to look up that on the public repository in NPM, but instead it will look locally for it. So if you have this directory lib containing this package stocks, this will be the way you import it in your in your program. Okay, we have someone saying that the slides don't work on Safari. I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry if they don't work. I haven't tested that. I'm afraid I cannot do much now. If you take a look at the Markdown source, you will be able to read something, although it's going to be very ugly, I agree. Let me paste that here for you. Yeah, I'm sorry, it's encoded, but you can read that. Yeah, sorry, I will take a look at that later. I don't know why it's not working. Thanks. All right, number 11, quick thing about NPM. All right, so when you import packages into your application using NPM, the way we have seen, you have two ways to do that in your local machine. They can either be saved on a subdirectory of your current project, and that will be a local dependency, a local package, or they could be saved globally. So let's say, for example, you have imagine some dependencies and package you want to use in all your applications for some reason, or you want to be able to use that dependency from the command line. In that case, you will probably install it globally, and we will see an example in a moment. Otherwise, the preferred way to install packages is local, because that way you will not pollute different projects with the same packages, and things will be more clear. The last link here is our page, the W3C page on npmjs.com, and you can see that we have a bunch of packages there. I think there are about 8 or 10 packages there. They are published publicly, and all of them are linking to the sources on GitHub. So just in case you want to take a look at that. All right, in the next slide, 12, we have a few examples of how to use NPM from the command line. The first example we have already seen, we haven't seen that yet. If you want to install something locally, you just type npm install and the name of the package. And the variation is... Mike? Okay. If you want to say something, just do, please. The second example is different, because typing this dash G, you make it install globally, and that means that this NSP package will be available to any application you have, any Node application you have on your machine. And then, because NPM happens to be a package in itself, so you could do this thing, which is so meta, to update NPM itself. You could do NPM update, dash G because it's global, and then NPM. And that will bring your NPM software to the latest version. Finally, we'll see in a moment a nice way to manage all dependencies using a JSON file that is called package.json. If you have such a file on your project, and we'll see about that in a minute, you can use this command, npm install, without any parameters, and it will install all dependencies at once. So that's much more efficient. In the next slide, 13, you have an example of what a typical Node project looks like on the file system. Not on the file system, but only the dependencies. If I have this project called Echidna Manifester, which is actually a project we have on NPM and on GitHub, if I type NPM list, it will give me a tree of all the dependencies. And as you can see here, dependencies on turn have their own sub-dependencies and so on. This is one of the not so pretty things about Node. The way they manage these dependencies is definitely not optimal. For one reason, you have lots of redundancy sometimes. So you could be using two packages, and both packages could have a dependency on their own that happens to be the same. And instead of reusing that dependency, they would keep separate copies most of the time. So things are very redundant and a bit difficult to manage. So yeah, that is not very nice. You have a bit of dependency hell there. Okay, on the slide 14. We have our first example of a proper node application. I think I will not spend too much time explaining this because we have consumed half of the time, and I don't want to be boring, and I prefer people to talk at the end. So let's say just a couple of things about this. So here you see we are using requiring twice, requiring two packages. One of them is Express, and the other one is sanitize HTML. You can look them up on NPM to see what they do. Express I included here because it's fairly popular. It's very, very popular. It's a framework, so it gives you some constructs and some handy functions that Node doesn't have by default. And Express is used for many things, but mainly I would say either to write dynamic web pages, websites, you know, processing parameters and querying databases and doing the typical things that the typical operations, or to write API to. So it's very likely that you will be using Express if you use Node. This program defines two routes. One of them is slash hi and slash hello slash followed by something, and that is a parameter. So if you go to the next slide, 15, you will see a link to this example. It's online, it's public. You can download it right now. And when you do that, you only have to do two more things to get it running. The first one is to install the dependencies. So again, we said we are using Express and sanitize HTML. So type npm install and the names of the packages. And when that is done, you just have to type node hello world, which is the name of the file, and it will be running. If you see the source code, this application is listening on port 3000. So once it's running, and it will not return anything, it will just stay there. It will not give you any information or return. You can then open the URL on localhost and try these two routes. If everything goes okay, the first route, hi, should welcome you with a hello stranger. And the one that accepts a parameter, you can type anything instead of Tarzan. You can type your name there, and it should greet you by your name. So if any of you are actually trying this right now and you're finding some issues or you want to comment, please do so now. We can maybe troubleshoot if you find some difficulties. In my initial version, I was not sanitizing the input, and Jiangyi pointed out that there was a security hole there, because if you, instead of the name, you typed something nasty like a script, you had a script tag with some JavaScript on it, it will be executed on the page. So now I'm sanitizing that input, and that's why we are using sanitize HTML, that package. I'll wait a minute for people to read that or to download and try and see if there are some questions or comments. In the meantime, let me remind everybody that this is being recorded and it's going to be public. Well, I hope it's going well. If somebody's trying, let me know if there are some problems. At the end of slide 15, I've linked to another example I've written just for the presentation. It's another very simple example of a program. And this one is a currency converter. So you just have to download it, install dependencies, take a look at the source code. And when you run it, okay, it's working, great. When you run it, you can then give to the program a currency code and an amount, and it will convert it to US dollars. So for example, I would type EUR2, and it will be 2 euro, and it will tell me how much that is in dollars and things like that. So again, it's a very simple example, less than 20 lines, for you to start with something easy if you want. All right, because there are no comments about that example, let's move on to slide 16, where we introduced the package.json file. So if we had to type npm install and then the whole bunch of dependencies for a complex project, that line would be very long and it would be difficult to maintain. So the way to automate some of these things and to keep some metadata about Node programs is to have this file with this special name under the root directory of your application. It's a JSON file, and some of the fields are pretty much obvious, so I guess you can understand what they are, the name, version, description, license, things like that. Probably the most interesting ones here are the last three, so dependencies and dev dependencies. Dependencies and dev dependencies contain the names of those packages that your application needs. So in this case, it would be how much and NSP. And they also contain information about which specific versions you want. And there is a whole bunch of wildcards and expressions you can use to specify those versions. Look them up on the npm.js page. You will have all the details here. But they allow a lot of flexibility. The difference between dependencies and dev dependencies is that dependencies are needed for your application to run in all cases, while dev dependencies are tools or packages that you will use only for development. So, for example, if you were doing unit testing on your application and that needs some specific package, you will put that as a dev dependency. Or if you're running some kind of linting on your code or you want to generate documentation while you are developing, all those packages will be dev dependencies. And finally, scripts, which may or may not exist, can contain shortcuts, so to speak, to common commands that you want to run. So think about that as if it were a makefile, for example, something like that. You can automate some commands and tasks by using these scripts. Again, all the documentation on the official webpage. Node uses npm packages use semantic versioning. So the last link, it's a link to documentation about how Node uses semantic versioning, which is fairly useful to know because it's a way to manage versions quite different to what we were used to in the past. All right, so in the slide 17, we can see the structure of the project. This project is called Proj, and you will have the package.json with the metadata and the dependencies. By default, the main file is index.js, but could have any other name. Typically, you will have something like lib or libraries or something like that containing your modules or packages or even classes if you are developing class object-oriented code. Maybe you have tests or code coverage or images or assets or things like that. And you will always have this node underscore modules. And this is where all your local dependencies are going to be installed. if they were global dependencies, you will not see it here. You will see them in some other directory in your operating system, your file system. But this dep1, dep2, up to dep n, these are local dependencies. Typically, you will put that node modules, the name of that directory into your .git ignore file, so that this node modules is not going to be kept under version control, because it's going to be huge and it's going to change very frequently. You don't want to share that. Doesn't make sense. If you take a look at our own projects, the ones we have on GitHub, you will see that they pretty much follow this pattern all the time. Okay, a word about modules on slide 18. This is another example of how to use local dependencies, local packages. Again, if you click on the names of the files, those files are public. I uploaded them to our space, so you can download them directly and it should be running, should be working. Just keep this directory structure, so make sure that temp management is inside this lib directory. Not much to say here. The other important keyword apart from require is exports. So the way we share resources from a module to the open world is using this exports dot something. In this particular example, we are sharing this body temp and the limit bus temp function. And the index.js using those two, the property and the function of that module. All right. We wanted to mention PM2 in slide number 19. That is a manager for node application, node processes, which we are using in production. So for example, the tools we use for the automatic publication system, pub rules and Echidna, are being managed by this tool, which ensures that those processes are running all the time. So if, for example, they crash, PM2 will take care of restarting those node applications automatically. It's quite advanced, can do many things, and it's proving very useful for us. So just a mention in case you find it useful too. A word about debugging, slide number 20. Debugging node, I find, is not the most pleasant experience life. I can think of a couple of things that bring me more pleasure. Debugging node. Okay. Yep. So if you have to do that, then you will have. I recommend you install this package, Node Inspector. And once you have it installed, you, instead of typing node and the name of your application, type node debug and the name of your application. And that will bring up an environment that is very similar to the debugging environment on your Chromium, for example. So if you are used to opening the console on Chromium and setting up breakpoints and inspecting variables and changing their values in real time and following stack traces and things like that on JavaScript, this is very, very similar to that. Yeah. So I say it's tricky sometimes because these tools, while they are okay, they could be better. And also because of the nature of JavaScript and callbacks and single threading and so on, very often you will have to deal with that characteristic and you will try to inspect the variable whose value is being set in another callback which hasn't been run yet and things like that. But well, if, again, if you've used a client-side JavaScript, you are used to that already. Slide 21, just a quick comment about headless browsers. So you may think that having Node is like having a headless browser, a browser that you can automate, because after all, you're running JavaScript. But it's not exactly the same thing for a few reasons. One of them is, for example, you don't have global variables in the JavaScript global objects like document or window. You don't have a document, or you could if you were doing that. But in principle, you are not opening a web page on Node. You don't have access to the DOM, and you. Another difference is that, for example, there are no user events. So there is nobody there clicking things or dragging things around. So it's not exactly the same, of course. The common thing is that you have a JavaScript environment, of course. If you want to automate operations on a browser, I could recommend these two, Nightmare and Phantom.js. We are using them in our project. And again, if you want to see examples of how to use them from Node, you could take a look at our projects. I can point you in the right direction. Okay, we are getting to the end. I think the next ones are probably to go a bit faster, simple thing. So Node is good for prototyping, I think, but when I stopped to reflect about that, I realized that, to be honest, whether one environment or language or platform or operating system is better or worse than other, very often depends on your proficiency and on your what you are used to and what are your preferences. So I find it difficult to be objective and say that it's faster to write a program in Node than it is to write on Java or on PHP or on Perl. I honestly think that it depends a lot on your preferences and your experience. So of course, if you are experienced with JavaScript, you will find it very useful and very easy to start doing things with Node. I found this website, runkit.com, which is a very, very nice service. It allows you to upload some Node code, and they will run it on their server for you, with some limitations, of course. And they have a very nice API. So it's a very nice way to share your Node experiments with the world, even if you don't have you can't run them locally for some reason, or you don't want to expose your computer to the internet. You can upload them there and do some tests. It's especially useful, I think, for APIs. So if you want to write a simple API for something you need, you would go to this page and have it running. Slide 23, it's a few pros and cons I could think of about Node. This is comparing against other languages we are using at W3C mainly. So, for example, whether Node is a better environment for us compared to Symfony and PHP or other languages. I think, this is again my opinion, please let me know your comments. I think if we were to start a new project in general, and all things being equal, if we had to decide between PHP and Node, one advantage of Node is that I think there is a bigger community. I don't have the stats, I don't have the numbers, but my impression is that people are more excited about Node nowadays, and there are more developers hanging around GitHub, for example. So I think we will attract more contributions with JavaScript than using Perl or PHP, for example. The installation is pretty easy, I would say. I haven't found cases where it took a long time to have Node running. So it doesn't have many dependencies. It's pretty small. It's pretty lightweight. Another advantage, I think, is that the future of some languages and platforms may be a bit uncertain, but when it comes to JavaScript, I might be wrong here, so please correct me if I'm wrong. I think JavaScript is not disappearing anytime soon, for better or worse, but it's staying with us. It's a safe bet, I would say, to develop on JavaScript. Okay, that's true. And finally, an advantage, although it's the last one because I'm a bit skeptical about this one, is universal JavaScript. You might have heard the name, what's the other name? Sorry, I forget. Just forgot. This was called a different name before, but well, anyway, it's this idea of keeping the same JavaScript code base in the client and in the server. So you would write your modules and your libraries and your code and have them shipped to both the client and the server. So the same JavaScript could be run on the browser and on Node, for example. It's a pretty interesting idea because in theory it could save you a lot of time. It would develop with the same language and actually reusing the same modules on both sides. So far I'm not seeing a lot of success in that front. I don't think many people are doing that, and I don't see the advantages so far. So I'm not sure if it's ever going to be really useful and really adopted by organizations. But anyway, if it ever happens, it would be cool. And among the disadvantages, well, it's JavaScript. So some people are allergic to JavaScript for good reasons. Again, I understand that. There are things we don't like about it, and that's going to be there as long as we keep backwards compatibility. It's asynchronous, debugging is not great, as I said, and I don't know if this is worse than in other platforms, but of course there are security issues, and Node is issuing security advisories from time to time, and patching, and the modules themselves, the NPM modules, being monitored for security all the time. So, well, that's one thing to bear in mind. Okay, 24, just a few questions for you. If you are curious or if you have heard about these terms and you want to explore a bit more. Okay, this was the word, isomorphic or isomorphic. I don't know how you say it. That name is really bad. There's nothing isomorphic about JavaScript being running in both sides. I think it's not a good description. That's why I prefer universal. But anyway, universal JavaScript, Browserify, Webpack, different ways to package dependencies and use them. Then there is Yarn, which is an alternative to NPM being developed by Facebook and a few other big players. We are not using it yet, but it seems to be interesting. We mentioned different ways to, Ivan asked about how the different ways to import modules and so on. Node is using the CommonJS approach. AMD is another approach that had some success, especially on the client side with Require, for example. There are different ways to do that. And as Ivan pointed out, there are actually native ways to do that nowadays. Then there would be interesting things to say about testing and continuous integration. We have some experience in that side on the team. So Denis and Dom and Robin, they set up our projects in very nice ways to have testing suites and to be run automatically on Travis CI, for example. And finally, features of JavaScript that are specific to the latest version, ECMAScript 6, like promises, for example, and maps and weak maps and sets and things like that. But again, this is not, strictly speaking, that's not Node, that's JavaScript. And finally, 25, a few links here for you. This page on the wiki is a page I started when someone asked me about nice links to start with JavaScript and Node. I've kept it updated with the things I found useful, and I think it's a good repository of information. Whether you want to have a reference for JavaScript, the old JavaScript or the new JavaScript, whether you want to have information about Node or tools around Node or best practices, lots of things like that. I think it's a good repository, and I encourage you to extend it with your links if you find something useful. And the last three links are to three of our Node projects on GitHub. These are public projects. We have more, but we were trying to think of smaller projects that would be good for someone who wants to get started and contribute in an easy way. So these three projects here, they are not daunting, they are not huge. They don't have a lot of dependencies, they are fairly simple. Like for example, the first one, this Gappy, it's like a proxy to the GitHub API written in JavaScript for Node. Fairly easy one, it's not doing anything very, very complex. It's pulling information from the GitHub API, and that's actually just one file. It could be split up in modules, to be honest, but it's just a file, and it's not that long. So if you see the three examples I've written for this presentation, and you are fairly confident, and that's easy for you, I would tell you you can go to this project and take a look, and of course tackle issues or submit a very simple pull request if you want, and the same with the other application. And that's it from me. The last slide is saying thank you to a few people for the presentation and feedback and comments. So that was everything from my side. Ivan.
Because I saw discussions on a different community about it, has the team, the system team, looked at TypeScript as a layer on top of JavaScript?
So, as far as I know, we are not using it. I don't know of any project of us that is using TypeScript. I personally am not too excited about that because I'm one of the weird people who were never concerned about JavaScript being dynamically typed and being loosely typed. In my experience, I didn't find that to be a source for bugs very often, so which is usually the main criticism and one of the reasons why people are trying to make JavaScript more strictly typed. So I haven't explored that yet. I don't know if somebody in the channel has and can tell us more about it. Anybody has any other comments or questions? Okay, thank you everybody then. Thank you for attending. Please drop me an email or ping me on IRC if you find some issues with the examples or you want to ask about anything about them. And especially if you find some spare time and you want to submit a pull request to our public projects or something like that. I would be glad to give you a hand. Thank you, everybody.